Hungry for spicy food and even hotter conversations? Craving community and authentic storytelling? Then join the table. This is Minor Legends, a new comedy fiction podcast supported by Potluck. Pull up every week with me, Angela Wong Carbone, and follow the stories of me and my friends as we serve up tasty tales of what it means to be Asian American at our weekly dinner hang. If you enjoy deep dishing on absurd stereotypes like tiger moms who tutor your dating game rather than grades, the insanity of your parents' immigration story, to the legend of that one good Asian cousin you can never live up to, then pull up a seat and grab a plate. Featuring dinner guests like Ronnie Chang, Brian Park, Usama Siddiqui, Celia Au, Perry Young, Supriya Ganesh, and more. It's a tasty rotation that'll leave you belly laughing and steeped in relatable and spicy conversations. Can you take the heat? Listen now for free wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
And hey, welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here today with an author chat with Dustin Thau, the author of the best-selling novel You've Reached Sam, to talk about his latest novel, a follow-up to that book, You Found Oliver. As always, Books and Boba is supported in part by our listeners. So if you've been enjoying the podcast and would like to become a bigger part of our book club, head on over to patreon.com/booksandboba to become an official member. Our Patreon supporters gain access to our members-only Discord server where you can chat with us and fellow book club members in real time about our book club picks and other topics. And if you join us at the Honey Boba level, you also gain access to our monthly bonus podcast, Boba Chats, as well as the opportunity to help us pick a patron's choice book club pick once per quarter. Our next patron's choice is actually our October book club pick, so excited to see what you all have in store for us.
Yeah, it's going to be my favorite month soon. I love Spooktober, and I'm really excited to see what you guys pitch to us for our spooky reads. So for this episode, we had Dustin Thau, who is the author of You've Reached Sam, and we talked about grief, we talked about magical realism, and texting, and how nothing is timeless. So I hope you guys enjoy this conversation.
Yeah, this has been someone we've been following on this podcast for a while now, so we're really excited to finally have him on the podcast. So please enjoy our conversation with Dustin Thau.
And we are here with a very special guest. Dustin Thau is a Vietnamese-American writer based in New York City. He graduated from Amherst College with a BA in political science and is currently in a PhD program at Northwestern University, where he studies critical media literacy. He writes contemporary fiction, and his debut novel, You've Reached Sam, is a New York Times and USA Today bestseller. And we're here to talk about its spinoff, You Found Oliver. Welcome to the show, Dustin.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. This is actually my first podcast, not just for You Found Oliver, but for the year.
Oh, nice.
So, oh, okay. Yay.
Yeah.
That's wild, because so the year's almost over. So
that's glad. True. Yeah.
Happy to have you.
Thank you. I'm one of those slower writers. I can't pump out like two a year. I'm very like once every year or two, which I think is healthy.
That's still fast, in my opinion. Considering that some people take like 5 years to write a manuscript sometimes. So still very impressive. Don't beat yourself up over that.
Thank you. Oh, that's not, of course, that's not to intimidate any aspiring writers out there. My first book also did take about 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like once you're in it, they're like, okay, we need another one in 12 months.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely the publishing timeline where everything happens all at once and then nothing happens and then everything happens all at once.
Exactly.
Once the book is out.
Yeah. Yes.
So I like to start off our conversation with a little icebreaker. Do you prefer texting, calling, or voice noting?
In real life?
Yeah, in real life.
In real life. I prefer, I guess I text mostly. I don't do voice notes just because what's funny is I don't like hearing the sound of my own voice.
Oh, well, this is a horrible experience for you because it's a podcast and...
Well, I just, yeah. I'm okay. I love, like, I can be a pretty chatty person. It's just like hearing myself talk back. And also, I will say, not just hearing my own voice, but hearing anyone read my work. So that includes, like, I haven't listened to my own audiobooks. And one of the crazy things is once you become like more established, the process of like an audiobook becomes different and you have more control in the process. So now for Oliver, they sent me a list of narrators auditioning and they would have to read me back what I wrote. And I was like, oh God, none of them, you know?
The reason why I asked that question was because in like You Reach Sam, you have Julie, the main character. She's like calling Sam's phone number and like listening to like voice recordings. And then you have this book, You Found Oliver, and it's mostly through texting. And I feel like it really shows your personality, like whether like you're a texter or caller or a voice noter. I feel like voice noters are they're like theater kids. They love to just like embellish their stories. And if you're a caller, I feel like you're very straight to the point. Like you don't want to wait. So you call. And then everybody else who is like scared of human interaction, we're like, just text.
I'm glad you brought that up because one of the funny things about this, I guess, series with You've Reached Sam and You Found Oliver is it centers around a cell phone. Right? Especially when, let's be honest, like this generation, like we live on our phones, we communicate through our phones. All our conversation is through the phone. And is when I was first trying to publish and sell and pitch You've Reached Sam is one of the things that it attracted like agents and publishers that they found like refreshing was oftentimes in storytelling, you do your best to avoid the cell phone. Because it solves everything, right? Like, why didn't you just call 911? Why didn't you just text them? Why didn't you just call them? Oh, I lost my phone. I left it at home. So it's saying like authors, like, and just like film, it's film as well. Like they do their best to avoid the phone as a solution and kind of get around it. But like, I've kind of embraced it. Like every page, like the book takes place through a series of phone calls, which is You've Reached Sam, which is very fun to do. And of course in Oliver it kind of switches it up and it's through text messages. And I would say like a big part of the book is through text messages, and it almost feels epistolary, you know, because there's so many. And that's something I always like love to read is like when text messages appear in books, because like the reality is like relationships today, like we are texting each other. How could that not be a part of a relationship that appears within a story? Like it would feel inauthentic and untrue. And so, yes, that was a really fun part to do.
Yeah. I was going to ask you this a little bit later, but in terms of, like you mentioned, a lot of You Found Oliver does take place over text. And I always find it interesting because like, personally, I enjoy texting initially, but like when I met my now wife, like she made me call her every day on the phone to talk. You know, in terms of texting, like the way I text is totally different than the way like kids these days text. And, you know, everyone has their own shorthand. The way you wrote, like everyone kind of, they're kind of like letters. Like you wrote it in a way that everyone can understand what Oliver and Ben are, you know, discussing. Was it a conscious choice, not like internet speak, like, you know, like kind of slang speak seep into your communications?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And that's something like, as an author, you do have to think about. And there was once really specific choice that I had to make, and I made it literally as it was about to go to print. Is, well, first of all, yeah, like you had to understand, like I think about this a lot because generations change, readers change, like languages change and trends change. Like the last thing you want to do, for example, is like, oh, talk about TikTok, because will TikTok exist in 5 to 10 years? It becomes like ancient in a way. And you kind of like date yourself in that way. And something that so back to You Found Oliver specifically, I think a lot of the young Gen Z readers out there, they like to text with no caps, right? Is it, everything's no caps. And then a lot of my friends do as well. So even an email, right? It makes things like feel like informal, casual when you write that way. And so my texts were originally, I said, because Oliver just turned 19, is just starting college. So I feel like I had the text originally in like no caps and lowercase. And I wrote the book. And as we were going to print, I was just, as we were in like the final like past pages where I got to look at it one last time, it was just like something felt off. And I was like, Dustin, like this trend kind of just started like 5 years ago, maybe. And who knows in 5 years if people are still doing this? Because I like love Gen Z, but they, you know, they are always trying to distance themselves and be distinct from millennials. Like we have like another author, Chloe Gong, one of my best friends in New York, who I love. She is Gen Z, right? We're like about like five. There's like a 5 year difference between us. And she texted me instead of an ellipsis, she does three commas. And I was like, "What's that? Was that an accident?" And I said, it's just what we do. And I said, you guys are just making stuff up at this point to be distinct. I said, just use, so they don't want to use ellipses. They use like, that's the new thing. It's like three commas as their ellipses, which I think is crazy. And then so like, as that was happening, I was like, this may likely change in a couple of years as like the generation changes. And so I messaged my editor and I said, before this goes to print, can someone go back in and capitalize every sentence? Because I can't do it at this point. Like, it's like out of my hands, you know, like it's moved on to the team of designers, which have like created the layout of the page. And I said, please just go in there. And like, I'm sorry you have to do that, because there are like probably 100 pages of text messages and just make everything capitalized. And yeah, so that is something I thought about. And that is a decision I made in the last second to not accidentally date the book.
That's so interesting. I didn't even think about how it could be dated by doing just all lowercase text, because I just like took it for granted that that is how people under 30 text these days. But yeah, you're right. Like, things do change over time, and people and younger generations want to distance themselves away from the previous generation. So yeah, it's very interesting. I feel like the lowercase text messages kind of stem from like Tumblr culture, because back when Tumblr was still a thing, people would post poetry and it would all be in like lowercase. I'm like, okay, the cycle has come back. So
yeah.
And, you know, as an elder millennial, I still find myself using like the shorthand from like the old like Nokia days, like just all the other abbreviations that I don't think people use anymore.
Like BRB.
Emojis are different too.
That's like, I always stay away from social media apps, like, because that always changes. Like, imagine, because like writing about Tumblr, right? Like, oh, I logged onto Tumblr today and post and read this. Or even Facebook, like, because obviously the younger generation is not using Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, like, speaking of social media, I think this is a very apt question right now to ask. How does it feel to be book talk famous? Because I've seen so many TikToks of like readers like crying and flinging your books in despair because you've ripped out their hearts. So, I mean, did you know that you were like popular on book talk? I'm guessing so someone must have told you.
The truth about that is, what's interesting is, I was not on TikTok when my book blew up. And quite honestly, I do not think I am TikTok famous. It is my book that is TikTok famous. You know, I think a lot of people don't know what I look like. I just only got on about like a year ago and started posting for fun. But it's actually a really funny story, because it was my first book, You've Reached Sam, came out in the end of 2021. So it's kind of like the pandemic was kind of just ending. And I was told through my publisher that, hey, by the way, your book blew up on TikTok. And I had no idea what that even meant. you know, I knew what it was, but I wasn't on it. And I didn't know like the success that would like ultimately come out of it. So there's like the really funny story is my publisher called me in to the office and I got to go for the first time. And I basically came in to like say, oh my gosh, thank you guys for doing this marketing for me. And when I said that to them, they're like, Dustin, we had nothing to do with this. We don't know how TikTok works because BookTok was kind of just becoming a thing. And we have no control or no understanding of how this happened. And the book just blew up on its own. So it was a real surreal experience that was a big surprise for me and a big surprise for my publisher, because in truth was they had, you know, they have, all publishers have a certain expectations of how they think your book will do. And they only printed a certain amount, and which wasn't very many. So we had essentially sold out of You've Reached Sam within 48 hours.
Across, oh my gosh,
all of US in every store. And so, yeah, that's kind of like the crazy story that of like how the book kind of blew up. Yeah. And it was also during the pandemic. So like the sad part was the printers weren't really working.
Yeah,
and it was,
yeah,
everything
paper
was several,
was really
months delayed.
And
they're like, we're so happy that like this book is so popular. Everyone wants to read it, but they don't exist. And we won't get another shipment for another 6 or 7 months.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
That's
nuts. Yeah. 48 hours. Like, really,
yeah,
really impressive.
Yeah.
That is wild, because I feel like when I first saw your book and I saw the cover, I was like, oh, this book is going to... I thought this book was going to be popular, because I feel like people like a specific brand of, like, pain. And, like, I feel like your book kind of... Like, both the cover and the description and the title kind of, like, invokes that. So, I don't know. I feel like... Maybe this is me looking at it at 2025, but I was like, I feel like this book was gonna
yeah,
resonate,
but okay,
right?
So I remember the first time I heard about You've Reached Sam, and it was actually during DV Pit. This was back in 2019. And for long-time listeners, you guys know what DV Pit is. It's like a Twitter book pitching competition. Well, not competition, but like kind of feels like a competition, because like the more likes and retweets you get from agents, the more likely your book will be picked up. But I remember you pitched for DV Pit, and it was described as your name meets If I Stay. And I'm just like curious, like you said, this book took a long time to write. So like how much did you have already before pitching? And like, what was the editing process like to get that manuscript to publication?
This is so funny that you bring up DV Pit, because it feels like that's like no one has asked me about that in so long. Because I did, yes, I that's part of like the story, is I did pitch it back in, was it, must have been 2019, I think. So it was a while ago. And DV Pit, like I knew for a few, it has stopped, but I think they're having a comeback this year. So writers, if you're like interested in that, you should definitely look it up. Yeah, so when it comes to You've Reached Sam, I think I follow the same story as a lot of people, where like I finished the book, I sent it out, no responses. Like I didn't even get rejections, I got zero responses, you know? And I tried that for, I would say, about 2 to 3 years. And ultimately my brother, who's kind of the type A, that's a very academic focus, was like, Dustin, you tried your best, go back and finish school. So I went back and finished school. And this was for undergrad. And as I was finishing school, like I still have, you know, you still have the dreams of like being a writer and doing, you know, writing stories that you love. And after I graduated, I said, you know what, I'm gonna try one more time. I'm gonna revise this book, spend a year revising this book, and also apply to graduate school. And the year after, I did pitch on DV Pit, and the pitch did really well, and that's how I got my agent. But also the editor from the publisher that ultimately bought it was also on DV Pit at the time. So editors are all also kind of like lurking and reading the different pitches. And it's so true to what you said earlier that like, everything happens all, either nothing's happening or everything happens all at once. And literally, I signed with my, when I pitched it on Twitter the next day, I probably got 30 agent requests. And the day after that, I got my offers. And within that week, I had signed. And we did a revision for about 2 month revision, and we sent it out and I sold the book. So all of that happened in coming from like these like 3-4 years where like nothing was happening. And in these 2 month span, like I had got an agent, made the deal, a 2 book deal. So yes, that's the story of You've Reached Sam. And now, of course, we're 4 years later and I'm writing the spinoff, which is You Found Oliver.
Yes. I mean, what a whirlwind journey for you. And your dedication in You Found Oliver, it's dedicated to Alex Astor and Chloe Gong, who is the author of the Violent Delight series. And we've had her on the show before. And you cited them as the inspiration for this story. Can you just elaborate on what that means? Like, how did they inspire the premise of your book?
It's a really funny story. So what is interesting is oftentimes as authors, one of the questions everyone always asks is, how did you come up with the idea, right? And I would say the majority of the time, it's nothing romantic, right? I came up with it in the shower. I came up with it as I was going to bed. But this one, You Found Oliver, it actually has a really good, interesting story. And so a couple of years ago, I was meeting with Alex and Chloe at a restaurant for dinner, and Alex doesn't show up. She's very late, which is, you know, a bit unusual because of how late it was. And we're kind of just waiting at the table. And eventually she says, she's here. And she texts us and says she's here. And we said, we're sitting in the back, come meet us. And she, like a minute or two later, she texts us again and says, I can't find you guys. And we're like, oh, we're like in the, we're like sitting at this round, this booth actually with a round table in the back. And the thing was the restaurant isn't like very big. And you just have to keep walking in and then you'll see us. And a couple minutes later, she texts us again and says, I still can't find you guys. And then, so I said, okay, Alex, go to the front and I'll just meet you there. So I get up and I go to the front of the restaurant and I can't find her. So I'm just kind of just looking around. And then ultimately I call her and I asked her where she is. She says, I'm in the front of the restaurant. I said, I'm in the front of the restaurant. And I said, are you at Monsieur Vaux on 2nd Avenue? She says, yes, on 2nd Avenue. And I said, standing up by the host with the white flower. She says, yes. And suddenly, like, it was like this one of the strange, like, feelings, one of the strangest feelings that I've ever had, where it felt like two people were standing at the same place, talking on the phone, who for some reason were unable to see each other. And it truly felt like this glitch in the matrix, that something was totally wrong. And, you know, like Mercury was in retrograde or something. And ultimately, though, it turns out she was at the wrong restaurant. And it was actually a sister restaurant with the exact same name that were 4 blocks apart.
What? 4 blocks apart?
What 4 blocks apart. The same decision. Street.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. They similar decor and with like Vietnamese, French fusion restaurant. Sadly, both are closed down, but I blame for the fact that the restaurants were so close. But yeah, so it was like that strange glitch in the matrix feeling that really stuck like with me. And I literally, when I sat down, that's all I could think about. Cause it's very rare that cause for me, and a lot of writers, I feel we write from true experiences and things that we know. And that feeling, I just couldn't let go of it. And by the end of the dinner, I said to them, I said, hey guys, I know what my next book is about. And I told them the story. And they said, and the first thing they said was, you need to dedicate this to us. And of course I kept my promise. Yeah, and for those who, I don't think I've explained what You Found Oliver is about, it is the spinoff of You've Reached Sam, but it can be read as a standalone. And I actually hope like some people do read it as a standalone. And the story takes place 1 year after Sam's death and follows his best friend, Oliver, who we learn has been texting him after all of this time, even though he doesn't get a response. And on the anniversary of Sam's death, Oliver kind of makes this decision to finally delete his number, but he ends up calling it instead, and someone picks up the phone. And is that moment that Oliver realizes this stranger has been reading everything that he's texted Sam for the last year. And not only that, he only lives a couple hours away. And these two ultimately continue texting each other. And slowly they build this connection and they eventually decide to meet up. But the magical twist is they realize they live 6 months apart in different timelines.
Oh, wow. Okay, we are exposing that because I wasn't sure if we could spoil that in this interview. I was so like, Oliver was obviously a character in your first book, You Reach Sam. And I'm just curious, like, what made you want to make him the protagonist for this book? Was there, I don't know, like, did you feel like his story was unfinished and you were like, I need to write, like, I have to expand his story because there's not enough pages to include it in the first book?
Yes. I will say, I am the type that believes like not every book needs a sequel, and that I would never return to universe unless I truly believed that story was just as compelling. And that's what Oliver's story was for me, especially having that very like out of like matrixy experience at the restaurant. Oliver has always been my favorite character, and I think he's a lot of people's favorite characters. So through all like the messages that I receive, and yes, his story, I think for those who have read You've Reached Sam, he is the characters who was kind of left like unfinished and out of the loop, without spoiling anything. He doesn't get his final words or final say, and he is left kind of in the dark at the very end. And I've always kept him in the back of my mind wondering like what his story was. I will say, I've been asked by a lot of different publishers throughout the years to write his story. I said, and I always says like, I'm not going to do it. And my second book, I will say the publisher asked for my second book to be Oliver's. And I said, no, I said, you can't really, as a writer, like I can't be forced to write anything. It has to truly come naturally. And I have to be compelled to sit down for a year and live within this person's head.
So like for me, I think what makes Oliver a compelling character is his loneliness. I mean, with Sam gone, Sam was his best friend. And then Julie, who he had this like, you know, she's kind of a new friend and they've bonded over their loss of Sam, and she's going abroad in Copenhagen and he broke up with his ex who cheated on him. And he's no longer living with his mom. So he's physically isolated, and not to mention, he feels like everyone has kind of moved on from their grief except him. And I feel like this is a very common feeling when you are grieving someone. It like, how do you sit with that loneliness of just of being like, everybody has moved on except me? So I just want to hear your thoughts on grief turning into loneliness and how Oliver sits with that loneliness and deals with it.
Yeah. So one of the things about my books, which all three of them do explore grief, but they're explored in, I would say, completely different ways and how it manifests within each character's lives. And I'm glad you brought up Julie in this case, because that's also one of the reasons I wanted to continue this book, because one of my favorite, while my books, of course, are romances, And I do like the romance between Oliver and Ben here. One of my favorite relationships is his relationship with Julie, which is a friendship born out of a shared grief, born out of this loss. And that was like really important for me. And I hope the readers will enjoy how their relationship has developed over the years. And for me, one of the books on grief, it's actually a play that I read a couple of years ago that changed my perspective on grief, is called Rabbit Hole, which I believe was nominated for like a National Book Award. And I had read it. And at the very end of the book, well, the book is about a mother losing her 2-year-old child in an accident. And everyone throughout the book is telling her how she should grieve and what grief looks like and what stage she should be in and how that works. And she kind of like rejects everything. And she feels like nobody understands her or what she's going through. And it wasn't until the very end when she's with her mother, and her mother says something that's really stuck with me to this day. And it was as simple as, grief is like a stone in your pocket. That's always in your pocket. And one day you kind of live with it until you kind of forget it's there. And one day, like maybe you're at a supermarket and you reach inside and you feel it and you go, oh, right, there it is. And it was that moment that I understood that grief is not something you have to get over, but it's something you learn to live with. And that's kind of like the ways in which I've approached all of my books, is, and especially with Oliver. And I think that's a feeling that, like, I think so many of us can relate with, is for those of who lost someone so important to our lives, is like, I don't want to forget this person. I do want to keep them in my life. And it feels strange that everyone else is moving on and I'm not. But so it's about, yeah, it's a really special story about how he kind of like has to come to terms with that while still holding like space for Sam.
Yeah, definitely. I think you wrote him learning how to hold that space for Sam really well. And as you mentioned, all of your books, You've Reached Sam, When Haru Was Here, and You Found Oliver, they all explore how people process grief differently. And I'm curious, like, why is grief a theme you like to revisit in your writing? Is it because you like making people cry, and you're just like, I don't want to write happy books?
Listen, yes, I can't argue the fact that yes, grief is at the center for in all three of the books that I've written so far. And I do get asked a lot, Dustin, why do you love sad books so much? And I always say, it's not that like I go looking for them. They're just the stories that I remember the most, you know? It's like the stories that have the most impact, because I believe that to grieve over a character is to know that you truly love them and that they felt real to you. And that's like one of the hardest things to do as a writer, is to make you feel that like this character could be your friend or your neighbor or someone you know.
Yeah, I will say, I feel like, you know, your books have grief in it, yes, but they're also books about healing, about overcoming, which is like, you know, knowing that there's like a sci-fi component to it. I was expecting it to like be real painful, but it was like, it's a very like, your stories about people like overcoming their grief and like moving on, which is, I thought it was really refreshing.
I mean, it's bittersweet. It's not like all doom and gloom, everyone.
All of my books, especially I think You Found Oliver, is a story of hope as well. And I like to believe that of all three of my books, You Found Oliver, while it deals with grief, while it still might make you cry, is the happiest of the three and comes closest to a happily ever after that I am capable of writing.
Yeah, well, I think part of that is because there's actual like a new romance that blooms throughout the book. It's not just about saying goodbye, but also saying hello, or you know, finding that new romance, right?
Yeah, because at the end of the day, my books are romances, and I truly love like that this relationship between Oliver and Ben, who is an astronomy student who he somehow gets connected to through Sam's phone number. And yeah, it's a story of like, right. It's a story of like right person, wrong time. And
yeah,
it's,
I was literally going to just ask this because timing is a huge factor when it comes to love. Like you can meet the right person, but be in different stages in life, you know, right person, wrong place. And it makes the relationship like really hard to commit. And I was just wondering like what your personal thoughts are on like the quote unquote perfect timing. Like, does it exist?
In some ways, yes. I do believe, okay, backtracking. One thing I do believe in is things do happen for a reason. So not necessarily about like things happening at the perfect time, but everything leads you to where you are essentially meant to be, right? So I'm a bit of like a manifester in that way. It's one of the reasons I always say happy endings are unrealistic because they never happen the way you expect them to. And I think that's true in the case for Oliver, is he ends up with someone that he doesn't expect, doesn't know that existed. And yeah, it is a time slip story, which I've always wanted to write. And something interesting is with all of my books, they kind of like deal with magical realism or like have this magical element to them. And oftentimes I get people to ask for the explanation or the science, or like, how did Sam pick up the phone? How did their timelines cross? And my books necessarily are not focused on the how, but like kind of like the emotional impact of it. So I guess what I mean to say is, for You've Reached Sam, for example, sometimes I like to put myself in the shoes of my characters. And when I can think of a person who I've lost in my life. And if they were to, if I was to call them up and they answer the phone, yes, the first thing I'm going to ask is how this is happening. But that wouldn't be the most important question to me. It wouldn't even be the second most important question. The most important question to me is this really you? And if it is, how long do we have? And that is my approach to all of my books, is this emotional, is the emotional core to these kinds of stories.
Yeah, like, I think the reason why I am a fan of magical realism is that it doesn't go into the how. It's like, yeah, that's not important. Like, if I wanted to know the how, I would be reading, like, hard sci-fi. I am here for the feels. I am here for the cozy vibes. Yeah. And that's all that matters to me. So, I'm curious about your thoughts on magical realism. Why is this a genre that you're drawn into?
Yeah, I totally agree. It definitely, when you begin to explain, it moves into science fiction, right? Because I love magical realism. I love stories like this, where two people are somehow connected across timelines through phone number. Because I guess I'm a bit superstitious in a way, right? I'm always, I like to believe that magical things kind of happen every day. And they happen more than we think. And maybe like these things aren't necessarily out of the ordinary. I can even think of like, it's kind of like bring circles back to that experience, like with Alex standing at the restaurant, unable to see each other. It's like, it's even though it's like that feeling that like happens all of the time. And like, for me, for example, a really simple one that happened like literally a couple of months ago. I live in a very tall building in New York City. And when I was going down the elevator, I met someone in the elevator who had just moved in, and there was this guy like carrying a guitar. And then he says hi, and I say hi. We kind of introduce each other, ask each other where we live, how long we live there, where we came from. And of course, the elevator ride is only so long. So we said our goodbyes. And I always hoped that like one day I'd like run into him again, but I never did. And over a year had passed. And when I got into this elevator and I was going down, it stopped on some random floor. And before the doors opened, I kind of just said, "Oh my God, it's him." And it opens. And there he is holding the guitar. And he comes in. And we look at each other. And we remember each other's names, even though it's been a year. And it's one of those strange feelings that you can't explain. And it almost sounds kind of like funny if you say it out loud, like, how did I know it was him when I haven't thought about him for a year? Another funny example that I love is last year I went on my first ever book tour for my second book. And I was it was in Munich with my German publisher. And they asked me, "Dustin, has anything crazy ever happened to you on tour with your readers?" And I said, "Not really, but there was a group of girls who came up afterwards and asked me to draw flowers on them so they could go get tattoos." And I was like, "I don't think you guys should do that, but of course I'll draw the flowers anyway." And so I drew flowers on them and we took photos. It was very sweet. And so back in Germany at the restaurant, we were having dinner with my German team, and they thought it was so funny. They said, did those girls ever get the tattoos?" And I said, "Oh, actually, to be honest, I don't know. And I don't know how I would ever know the answer to that. This was several months ago." And dinner ends, and I go back to my hotel and I take out my phone, and I was tagged in an Instagram post. And that one of the girls had posted a carousel of her getting the tattoo with all of her friends, a picture of that tattoo. And she had posted it at the same time, like while I was at dinner, when someone asked me that question, and I had forgot about it. And that's kind of like something that kind of freaked me out. You know, I was like, it's like, you heard me. It's like, and you just answered the question. And it's just like, it sounds like weird to say now, because like, you know, there could just be coincidences. But I think there's something, you know, something else, something magical. And these things like are normal. And I use like the space of storytelling to kind of like write about it.
Yeah, I think there is something very comforting about thinking that the universe is listening to you. And
yeah,
it will give you what you ask for, but not when you expect it. I don't know. It's just comforting, even though you don't know how things are going to end up.
Yeah, I will say it also, one thing I do love about You Found Oliver is the class that he takes. So Oliver takes a philosophy class, which is actually based off of a real class that I took in college. And the professor, who also happens to be Julie's mom, is based off of a real professor that I had as well.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah, so she's like, I did not think that that character would be based on a real person, because she thinks so out of the box. But yeah, go on.
Yeah, she is a very real person. And it was someone that I feel like has kind of changed the way I think about the world. And one of the books that she assigned to us to read is a book that Oliver is also assigned to read. And it was really special, I felt, to revisit it, because it held so much importance to me. And the book is by Bachelard. It's a philosophy book called The Poetics of Time. And the thing about it is, when I had the class with her and she signed the book, she says to us, like, I don't want you to read it like any other book. I want you to open up to any page and read it in any order that you want, which was in that time, which is very strange to think about. She says you could even read it backwards, you know. And this is, and I kind of like bring that into the classroom with Oliver. And it was kind of like me, essentially the book is about the philosophy of the imagination, to kind of like reject these authoritative ways of thinking. And it's about infinite possibilities. And it's it follows one of my favorite quotes from The Poetics of Space, which I do assign in the book, is there are more possibilities in a closed box than there is in an open one. And I don't know. And yeah, so it's kind of like in the book itself, Oliver at the end of class. So actually, sorry, in one of the lectures, the professor brings a box to class, a closed box to class, and has everyone guess what's inside. And they take the whole task guessing. At the end, Oliver goes up to her and says, "There's nothing in there, is there?" And she goes, "That's so funny that out of all the possibilities, that's what you choose to believe." And I think that's like a reflection on so many of us, including myself at a very young age, to kind of like think back and realize how much like limitations and constraints that we put on ourselves, on who we are and who we can be. And her class, in the same way that my book kind of functions, I do hope it helps people think their way out of that and to kind of like step out of these like dominant timelines on how we live our lives, right? Which very meaningful to me, because I'm the kid who dropped out of school for 2 years and ultimately came back. I'm the kid who decided to do creative writing and live on my grandma's couch for a couple of years. And yeah.
Yeah, I do love that you have this like philosophy class in the middle of your book that kind of serves as like a way to kind of explain the themes of what's going on, but not exactly what's going on, right? You never explained how the time travel works, just using magical realism to tell human stories and to tell like stories of, you know, this is essentially a romance story, just happens to have like multiple timelines and then time travel. And I especially love, I got a good chuckle out of like Oliver and Ben's first date is at the cafe or the diner that Twin Peaks takes place in.
Oh, yeah. Tweety's? Yeah. I've actually been to Tweety's. Have you?
Oh, really? I haven't.
Okay,
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So my husband is a really big Twin Peaks fan, and my friends are also big Twin Peaks fan, but they like grew up in that town. So they were like, "Oh yeah, like want us to take you to the diner?" And I'm like, "Hell yeah." And
oh
it looks exactly like it how it does on the show. And like there, if you ever go, get their cherry pie. It's so good. Like I still dream about that cherry pie. It's so good.
I'm so glad you're a fan of Twin Peaks and that you get the reference and that you like the reference and that you've been there. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like one of like there's so many places like that I haven't been to that appear in my books. I am like on Google Maps. I'm looking at pictures. I'm on their Yelp, like looking at what they're serving, how the place looks.
Yeah. I love that your book kind of gives a nod to like one of the OG like magical realism stories.
Yeah.
I guess. You know, what is it about the Pacific Northwest that makes it such like a great place for these stories to take place in?
I mean, think about Twilight, you know, Twilight is in Forks, Washington.
Yeah, for me, that's just where I grew up and where I'm from. I live in Vancouver, Washington. And actually, that's not true. I live in Camas, Washington, which was close to Vancouver, Washington. And Camas was even smaller. It was very middle of nowhere, one gas station. And the most exciting thing about our town was we had this place that sold seasoned fries. And so that's where I lived and grew up my entire life. And that's where like the stories take place in Ellensburg, which is a couple hours away. So that's the place that I'm familiar with. And I love to draw from places that I know very well.
I think you set the setting really well and really loved just the atmosphere of it. I don't know, like, because like there's like rain and mist and then like seasons change. I'm like, wow, it's like so like it's like looking at a mood board, you know. It's very visual to me. And I absolutely love the cover. I think you've hit the jackpot when it comes to your book covers. It's by the
Thank
same
you.
Artist, right?
Yeah. Yes, her name is Zipsy, South Korean incredible artist. And I'm very lucky that she's done all three of them. And I do love, like, for You Found Oliver, if you take You've Reached Sam and you put them together, they connect. Like the cherry blossom branches.
Wow, that was like great book packaging planning there on your publisher's part. So, you know, like we're winding down to the end of our time, and You've Reached Oliver is part of, you know, I guess like the multiverse now, because you've expanded your universe from You've Reached Sam. Do you plan on continuing this universe? I mean, like you said that you need to have a strong reason to, you know, write a sequel, write a spinoff. So I don't know, is that possibility still out there for you?
Well, I believe in infinite possibilities.
Yes.
But if I'd be honest, right now, as it stands, I think it's just the two. And I don't have plans currently for a third. But, you know, if I did, it would come from some crazy wild glitch in the Matrix experience where I just have another epiphany and I have to dedicate it to the person that I'm with. But yeah. But yes, I don't know if you've noticed, like, because maybe it's been a while since you visited Sam, but one of my favorite things about the two books that I was able to do here was You've Reached Sam opens with a series of flashbacks that tells kind of the story of how Sam and Julie met and fell in love in one single chapter. And in You Found Oliver, I return to the memories. And it's kind of like I go through a lot of the same memories, but through Oliver's perspective. And for me, I like to think of it as there's this interview with a director of the new Wicked movie, right? Because essentially Wicked is a fan fiction of The Wizard of Oz. And the way he described it was like, if you were to take the camera, which is on the yellow brick road, and you slowly panned it to the side. But for me, as you pan the camera there, you'd see Oliver, who was there the entire time. And his story is just as important as Julie's. And that's kind of like the takeaway, how I kind of like sell the novel to my readers. It's like, Oliver is the alphabet in this story.
So he's got to pan the camera a little bit more and find like the third stalker that's been following them all this entire time.
Or Julie's mom could have her own.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to learn more about Julie's mom. She's such a character. So I know that you are going to go on a book tour. You're even going to the UK. So are you excited for that? Anything special planned for your tour?
I'm extremely excited. It always changes. Last year, I got to go to Germany, Belgium, France. And this year, of course, I'm doing the US leg, which is six cities, starting in New York. I am going to the UK for the first time, and we're doing three stops. And one of the stops in the UK I'm doing with my best friend, Jack Edwards, I guess a booktuber, book talker.
Oh, Jack Edwards. Yeah.
Yes. And I'm also doing an event in Chicago with Chloe Gong. And I know she and I are going to go into more detail about that night at dinner and her perspective on it. So I think that's going to be really fun to have her sitting there.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tangent, and we'll close out this interview really soon because I've taken enough of your time. But it was for Chloe Gong's Cold Wire book event. And like I saw on TikTok that like you were saying like, oh, when you go support your ex's like events. And I'm like, wait, what? Like they is this real? Is this not? And I found out that it wasn't. And a lot of people were fooled by it. And I was like, like you must have a really close relationship with Chloe if they can like joke around like this. So,
yeah, we're definitely besties who have not dated. I will say though, yes, like I did about two videos of like her as my ex as like this fun little bit, and it blew. They did really well. They blew up. And I think most people didn't think it was real, but like all of BookTok was kind of in on the joke. So it was fun to do. But she was like, Dustin, this is becoming too much because there is an amount of people who do think it's real. And she is dating someone at the time. So sadly, we can't continue the bit. So I am in the market for another author to fake date.
This sounds amazing. Mm-hmm. Please send your pitches and your resumes over to Dustin because it sounds like a great bit. But Thank you so much, Dustin, for taking the time to speak with us about your new book. Where can people find you?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I think it's really a fun chat, especially my first one coming back after a year of, you know, isolated in my room writing. You guys can find me on Instagram at TheDustinTao. I'm also on TikTok, but you don't have to look at them.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Books and Boba, and congratulations on your new book, and good luck on all your future endeavors. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, guys.
And that was Dustin Thao. His latest novel, You Found Oliver, will be available at bookstores everywhere on September 30th, 2025, which if you are listening to this episode, the day of release is tomorrow. So definitely check it out. It will also be available on the official Books and Boba online bookstore, where, as always, your purchases support not only us at Books and Boba, but also your local bookstores. Before we call an episode, though, Rira, can you remind us one last time what book we are reading for Book Club for September 2025?
Yeah, sure. So we are reading A Witch's Guide to Magical Innkeeping by Sangu Mandana. And she is the author of The Very Secret Society of Irregular Witches, which, you know, is in the same universe. And it is about a witch who has lost her power and is now running an inn and becomes, you know, and just deals with quirky guests and shenanigans. It is a very cozy, magical book, and I think it will be a good start to the Burr months.
Yeah, looking forward to discussing this very cozy sounding magical romance. And as always, if you've already finished the book and have thoughts to share, please let us know either on Discord or Goodreads forums. We always love to include your feedback on our discussion episodes whenever possible. But with that, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thank you once again to Dustin Thao for joining us, and we'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu, and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @BooksandBoba, and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Great news! The Korean Drama Podcast is back for our sixth season.
The Korean Drama Podcast is the podcast about watching Korean dramas by people who don't watch Korean dramas. Hosted by Candace, Jane, and me, Kim.
Wait, if it's our sixth season, can we still say we're people who don't watch Korean dramas?
I'm sure it's fine. Let's just call it character development, which we love in K-dramas.
For our new season, we're recapping the hit 2025 romantic fantasy series Heavenly Ever After, about an elderly couple who reunite in the afterlife. Only he's now in his 30s while she's chosen to appear in her 80s.
Awkward.
So join us each week as we discuss the highs and lows of the afterlife in Heavenly Ever After, episode by episode.
Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.
And I co-host the podcast Asians in Baseball alongside Naomi Koh and Scott Okamoto. Asians in Baseball is exactly what it sounds like, a podcast about the Asian and Asian Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander Americans in Major League Baseball. Every week, we break down the highlights of what's going on with Asians in baseball and then take a deeper dive into the Asian and Asian Americans past and present who have shaped baseball as it is today. Whether you're Kim Eng's number one fan or you've never even heard of Hideo Nomo, we've got something for everyone, especially for the Shohei Ohtani stans. Maybe too much for the Shohei Ohtani stans. Listen to Asians in Baseball wherever you get podcasts, part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.
Hi, I'm Charlene Kay. I'm a musician, songwriter, and guitarist. Growing up, I loved music. Whether it was pop, acoustic, emo, I ate it all up. But as a Chinese-American kid living in Scottsdale, Arizona, I also felt isolated, never really seeing artists who looked like me or shared my experiences. So after years of performing on stages all over the world, I wanted to create a space to highlight the amazing Asian musicians who I knew were out there, just not always getting played on the radio. That's why I started Golden Hour, a podcast where Asian singers, songwriters, instrumentalists, and music producers share their personal stories, and it's a space for you to discover your new favorite artist. Listen to Golden Hour with me, Charlene Kay, wherever you get your podcasts. Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.